There we go. All right, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Lehigh Valley with Love podcast. I'm your host, George Wacker. And tonight we have a special treat. We're talking to hopefully three, but definitely two fantastic authors ahead of Society of the Arts annual cocktails with the authors on October 9th and the luncheon with the authors on October 10th. You can see we're at the website here. The authors we are speaking to tonight are Amy Jo Burns, who is the author of the memoir Cinderland and the novel Shiner, which was a Barnes & Noble Discover pick, NPR Best Book of the Year, and Told in a Language as Incandescent as Smoldering Coal, which is pretty fantastic. And that was according to the New York Times. Shelley Noble is a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of 16 novels of historical fiction, historical mystery, and contemporary women's fiction, including The Tiffany Girls, Ask Me No Questions, and Whisper Beach. And Meg Schaefer, who hopefully will be joining us as well, is a part-time creative writing instructor and full-time MFA candidate in TV and screenwriting at Stevens College, Columbia, Missouri. Her debut novel, The Wishing Game, a national bestseller, is available now from Valentine. Her second novel, The Fantasy of the Lost Story, will be published in July 2024. And this is all gearing up for SOTA, S-O-T-A, the annual Cocktails with the Authors on October 9th and Luncheon with the Authors on October 10th. These events help raise funds for educational programs at the Allentown Art Museum, the SOTA Print Fund, and the SOTA Education Endowment. For more information, visit sotapa.org. Special thank you to our sponsors, Banco Beverage Company, Lehigh Valley Health Network, Michael Bernadin with Remax, Molly's Irish Grill and Pub, WDIY 88.1 FM, and Wind Creek Event Center. All right, let's dive into it. Thank you guys so much for being patient with me. And I'm going to welcome Amy Jo Burns and Shelley Noble to the show. Hello, ladies. How are you doing?
Hi, good to see you, George. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
I'm
thank
glad
you.
To be here.
Happy Monday. You're like, I had to truncate your bios down here because look at all this. They just go on and on. You guys are some really, I'm honored to have you on the show tonight. And I think it's really fantastic you're coming in for this great event. So.
Okay.
Well, we're going to get right into it. We had talked previously, we had some writing questions before we get into the event itself. So I wanted to bring up those, you know, as an aspiring writer myself from time to time, it's a great opportunity to be actually able to talk to published authors about some of their secrets. So I want to start right off with it. What inspired you to pursue writing as a career? And how has your writing evolved over the years? I'm going to throw it out to either one of you and take it from here.
Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'll do it. I'll do it because I kind of stumbled into writing. I have to confess right up front. I was a dancer before I was a writer. And then I had two kids and moved to the suburbs. And then kids grow up. So
right.
My neighbor was, you know, we would go to the museums in the afternoon and she said, you know, what are we going to do next? And I said, I don't know. I've been looking around. And she said, you read so many mysteries. You should write one. And right. I said, okay. And I wrote a mystery. And they told you to write what you know in those days. Mm-hmm. Now you write whatever you want. But so I wrote a mystery about a dance company. And I got an agent and he sold it in a 3-book contract. My first reaction was, great, I only have one book. And right. So I wrote another book. And then as things took off, I added contemporary women's fiction because that's what we're all about, whether mm-hmm. you were writing mystery or romance or thrillers. And then I started writing historical mysteries. And then with Tiffany Girls, I had an epiphany, and now I'm writing historical women's fiction. So sure. It's been kind of a wild ride and I really like doing it. It's a good thing, right?
And Amy, I know, I think Meg may be coming in, so we'll see. But Amy, same question to you. What inspired you to pursue writing and how has your writing kind of evolved over the years?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I think I've always been a reader. I've always loved books, but I never considered writing as a career, because where I grew up, it wasn't really something people did. But interestingly, when I was 18 and I left home, I think there's something about feeling homesick that has made me a writer. I'm not sure I would have become one if I hadn't left Western Pennsylvania. So writing is, I think, the only thing that I can do that makes me feel like I give home back to myself in a way, because I'm always, my books are set in Western Pennsylvania. They're about people that I know, and it makes me feel like I have an important piece of home with me no matter where I go, and I get to share it with my readers.
Right.
And because I think one thing I really like to do in my books is to showcase characters who don't often find themselves in the pages of books, whether it's, you know, a moonshiner or a roofer, as is the case with Mercury, my most recent book, or a snake handler's daughter. So I like to experiment with that and just give my home a place in the landscape of literature. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I think about how my writing has evolved, actually today is the 10th anniversary of my first book. So it's kind of exciting.
Oh, okay.
And that book, you know, is set in my hometown, as is my most recent. But I think when I started writing, I really wanted to write about everything that I thought in the world was bad and wrong and broken. And now, 10 years later, I find myself thinking it's more important to write about what's worth saving and what's worth fighting for. And if I'm tearing something down, asking myself what better thing am I building in its place? So I think it becomes more gray as life goes on, but I'm realizing it's maybe not about finding the right answer, but asking myself the right question. So that's what I've been trying to do with every book that I write, is ask myself a new question.
And on that note, we're going to bring Meg in. Meg, thank you for coming in. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Can you see us? Yay, we can see and hear you too.
Sorry, I was late. I'm still on Western time. I just spent 2 months in Oregon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, okay. This couldn't have been turned out at a better time. So I'm going to ask you the question I just asked Amy and Shelley, which is, what inspired you to pursue a career in writing? And then how has your writing evolved over the years?
Well, I hope it's evolved, because when I decided to be a writer, I was 8 years old. So,
okay.
and I do remember beginning my writing career at age eight. I remember sitting in music class with my friend Kendra, third grade, and her asking me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I remember saying writer and something else. I don't remember what the other one was, because I didn't, whatever that was, I didn't do it. But but I'm one of the few people who, whatever silly thing you said when you were a kid, when somebody asked you what you wanted to be when you grew up, president or veterinarian or astronaut or whatever, I actually did it. So so it can happen sometimes. So if your kid says they want to be an astronaut when they're 8 years old, maybe send them to space camp. You never know. But yeah, I remember writing my first story when I was eight in the after school program at my elementary school. And I bring it up because the first thing I wrote was a sequel to a fairy tale. And that's what, in a lot of ways, The Wishing Game and The Lost Story are still, in a way, writing sequels to fairy tales. The Wishing Game is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but for grownups. And instead of chocolate, it's books. And The Lost Story is not for grown-ups.
I love that, because it's such, between Shelley and Meg, such a different way you started, like, your professional career. It's just really neat, you know, how you can come
every writer different. Has a different story.
Right.
When I was eight, Meg, I wanted to be Davy Crockett. So good on you.
I was not that adventurous, which is why writing is such a good career for me.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to go right into the next question. When you're talking about all this and how we get started, how do you get started with your next novel? Like the first sentence, or how does that begin? Can you kind of describe that process as succinctly as you can? I guess I'm sure it's complicated, but
it really isn't. I was at a signing in Seattle, and a guy stayed afterward to ask me about my writing process and what I did every day, what the secret was. He wanted to know the secret, and I had to break his heart and just say the secret of writing is writing. That's all it is. At some point, you just sit down and start writing. And it's the same for anything. You know, I use the example when I'm teaching that we all could easily imagine a cathedral. But if you want to build a cathedral, you have to learn to be a bricklayer. So writing is very akin to me to bricklaying. It's putting one word down after another, putting one sentence down after another. And if something's not plumb, if it's not straight, if it's not working, tear it down, start over again. So it's really, I come from a blue collar family. My dad was a truck driver. Neither of my parents went to college. So for me, writing is a craft mainly. The art part is so hard to, it's almost impossible to teach. You're almost kind of born with it. But the actual job of writing is a craft like any other.
Right.
So it's just kind of sitting down and doing it.
I'll kick the question over to Shelley. How do you begin your writing?
It's different with each book. I think I use the kneading the dough method of writing rather than the building a train track. Sometimes I have a character. When I do get characters, I like to live with them for, you know, it used to be a few months. Now it's a few weeks because it seems like deadlines are always hanging over your head. But, you know, just to see how they're going to react to things. So I write down snatches of things. Or what about this plot? I may not have a plot in mind, but I have a situation and then a setting, because I write historical fiction mainly now. The setting sort of takes care of itself. And I don't know if I'll ever leave Manhattan as a setting. There are so many fantastic unknown people, women especially, that just do amazing things that we've never heard of. So I put them all together in this sort of glomming thing of story, and then I gradually pull out the threads, and then sometimes I have to get rid of those. But it's more of a, I don't know, it's this more of a this than this. So, and somehow I get a book out of it. So it's a wonderful way to live.
And Amy, same question. How do you start your next novel? How do you do it?
I think a lot about mood. I'm a very moody person in general, so I will usually pick a mood for a book before I decide anything else. But after mood, then I think about setting, and then character kind of comes after that. Pretty early on, I will make a playlist for myself about songs that kind of give me the vibe that I'm looking for. And so I will usually think about things for a pretty long time before I even start writing. And it helps to have one project in the works while something is sort of percolating in the back of my mind. And then once I kind of get a solid playlist and I know what kind of mood I'm going for, from there, I kind of think of character and how they're interacting with whatever place they're in. And that's kind of, it's very, very messy, but that's usually where I start is with what music feels right. And then I go from there.
Are you guys like keeping crazy notebooks and everything? Or are you just like writing like one thing and going through? I'm just curious what it looks like.
Notebook, yeah. Always have a notebook. Yeah. It's right in my, you know, I'm going to the park for a walk, but I have my notebook with me in case
I love it. Yeah.
I come up with something in the park. Always keeping notes. And if you don't have a notebook, I've texted myself, sent audio notes. You have these great ideas at 3 a.m. And if you don't write them down, you will not remember them when you wake up. You will remember you had one, which is the torture. What was my great idea at 3 a.m.? But if I didn't write it down, it will never come to me.
So we have talked a little bit about the regions we're coming from. Meg's like, I was out west, Shelley, Manhattan, Amy, Western Pennsylvania. Can we talk a little bit about how, where you live or you know, your community, how it influences maybe your storytelling? Shelley, do you want to go first? You were talking about the rich history of Manhattan.
Sure. I'm an East Coast girl. I was born in the South, but I'm an East Coast girl. My contemporaries take place along the coast because the beach is where I go to get rid of the dross and then fill up the well, so to speak. So my contemporaries, women's fiction, are usually take place at, you know, some kind of beach town. But Manhattan is where my mysteries, and I write historical mysteries. So the history of Manhattan, you just walk, I'm like a tourist. I'm actually a tourist because I moved across the bridge, but I'll just stop and look because the skyscraper that's there used to be the amazing things, the brothel, the first New York Times building, and the people who worked there who we don't know we're doing fascinating work. So yeah. I can't imagine leaving Manhattan right. for long in my books. It's magic.
And Meg, why don't you go next? Because I have a specific question for Amy.
Sure. I live in Kentucky, lived in Kentucky my whole life. I was in Oregon mm-hmm. on vacation for 2 months. Well, book research. The new book is on the Oregon coast. We went out there for a book tour and book research. But yeah, I'm a Kentucky writer, or I'm a writer from Kentucky, but I'm not a Kentucky writer. And you'll know the difference because I don't set many books in Kentucky. I always throw I'll throw a little Easter egg in there. But for me, there are writers of reality and there's writers of imagination. And I'm a writer of imagination. I don't want to write about myself. I am boring. I don't want to write about my town. I already live here. I want to go somewhere and I want to take people with me. I love being boring, because it allows me to be so weird and wild in my work.
That's so interesting because I think Amy might be slightly different. I don't want to say, but you know, your book Mercury is set in a small, tightly knit blue collar town. So how did your personal experiences growing up in Western Pennsylvania shape that book and your writing?
You know, I'll tell you, I think, do you hear the feedback? I'm not sure. I'm okay? Okay. Okay. Well, I'll tell you this. So I did grow up in Western Pennsylvania. And to me, what Western Pennsylvania means is living with a family of roofers. And that is what Mercury is about. You know, I think I first learned how to tell a story from the roofers in my life. I'm the daughter of a roofer, the granddaughter of a roofer, the niece of a roofer, and the sister of a roofer. And, you know, they are exactly as you would think. They're very brave and they're strong, but they're also incredible storytellers. And they're the people who first taught me how to tell a story. So when I thought about writing my next book, I didn't even realize it was going to be a book. And I just sat down and started writing about the things that are important to me. I wanted to write a book for myself. And pretty soon, you know, when I write about home, there are, you know, what comes up is there's roofers. So this is a book that's set in the 90s that is about a family of roofers. And I'd never read a book about roofers before. And I mentioned this before, but I love the idea of giving gravitas to a small town and creating, taking real landmarks and putting them in a book, because, you know, we all sort of take for granted that when you read a book about New York, you know what the Empire State Building is. And when you read about Paris, you know what the Eiffel Tower is. So I wanted to give that mm-hmm. kind of like grandiose feeling to some of the landmarks in my town. So people who drive through Western Pennsylvania will see them and say, I read about that in a book. And I think that's a really special thing that I don't see as often as I would like in books. So that was sort of the inspiration for why I wrote about home.
I love you guys are so different, like, but it's great, like, in that way. But go ahead, Shelley.
I just want to say that Amy is like, we do just the opposite things. You make the small grandiose, and I take the grandiose and like distill them down to like tiny. So that's kind of interesting. And then Meg adds the imagination. Yeah. We're solid, right?
We've got all
another question that might, you know, kind of differentiate you guys. What is your writing process look like? Do you sit down in front of a typewriter? Or do you write freehand? What do you do?
I have a Neo Alpha Smart, which is an old word process. I'll use sometimes. It's wonderful because there's no internet. So I will leave my phone in the car and take this into a coffee shop or library and get a ton of writing done very quickly. I'll use that when I'm on deadlines. And then obviously at some point I have to put it into my laptop. But I've written freehand too, longhand in my notebook. Same thing. Just go to a coffee shop, leave the phone in the car, and then have no internet access. And you will be shocked what you can get done when you do not have the internet distracting you. But write every day pretty much.
Good point. Amy or Shelley?
I'll go. Yeah. It seems to be going counterclockwise. I write every day. I write in the mornings. The mornings I go to the gym, I write early morning and then in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I take notes. I use a lot of paper. I print out a lot of nonfiction historical facts. I use a lot of primary sources. They're not available, you know, the way you would normally get things. So you have to like push and pull and beg and get somebody to send you something. And then I storyboard, not on Scrivener, but on a gigantic piece of board on the site wall. And yeah, I write for as many days as I can, as long as stuff is happening. And then I take off. I don't do like Monday through Friday and then take the weekend off. It's like sometimes I have 2 days worth of good stuff. Sometimes I have to quit after 2 days of not such good stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of haphazard that way.
And Amy, how do you approach it?
So I set my writing schedule according to my kids, since they're in school and I can only write when they're in school. So I'm pretty dedicated to it, where as soon as they get on the bus, I run back, and I really like to write in bed. So that's sort of my workstation. I come and I get in bed, and I usually will write my first draft longhand in a notebook, and then I'll type it up into my computer and then go from there. But I don't know, there's something about writing in bed that helps me feel like the pressure's off a little bit. And I think I get kind of my best, my favorite sentences come from bed. I've tried a desk, I can't go back. It's all bed all the way for me.
That's so interesting. I love it. Yeah, you do you have like a little bed desk?
I have a lap desk that is, I'm pretty sure, about 25 years old, and it's seen better days, but you know, there it is. It's not glamorous. Like, if anybody ever wanted to come
That's
see it,
not glamorous.
It would ruin the magic.
Funny.
Lawrence Block was opposite. He said he couldn't write unless, even though he knew he was going to revise, he could not write unless what he imagined this was what was going to get published. So if his writing, he had to think, this will get published, so I have to write it. Otherwise, he wouldn't write it at all. Whereas you're the opposite, and I'm the opposite. Like, take the pressure off. Nobody's ever going to see this. Only the last draft is anyone going to read. So
that's
it's just, get some words down. Doesn't matter.
So, Meg, I have a specific question for you. We talked on this a little bit, but The Wishing Game is described, or has been described, as a love letter to books. How do you think childhood stories and the power of imagination continue to play into our lives as adults?
That is a big, deep question, but I'll just give a personal answer. The fact that I'm 46 years old and writing a book right now that's sort of inspired by Nancy Drew and Alice in Wonderland, books that I read when I was still in single digits, you know, 8, 9 years old, should say something about how powerful these books are that we imprint on as kids. There's a line in The Wishing Game that I think says it all. The author character, Jack, says the stories write us. And that just means the stories we read when we were kids that turn us into readers will put us on a path for the rest of our lives. If you are a Little House on the Prairie kid, you're going to be completely different from a Wrinkle in Time kid as you grow up. I had a Little House on the Prairie best friend, and I was a Wrinkle in Time girl. And we went very separate paths in life, even though, because, you know, it showed us who we were. It was like reading tea leaves or looking in a magic mirror, these books that we fell in love with. I could not stand Little House on the Prairie, and she couldn't stand A Wrinkle in Time. And it revealed who we were to us. And that's why childhood literature is so important, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, my daughter, who is in second grade, like, her homework is, I love it, is to read 15 minutes a night. I'm like, that's the best homework.
Perfect.
Right? So, you know, and we do it, and she, you know, loves all different types of books, and it's just encouraging the fun of it. And that's what's been working, and she loves it.
That is awesome.
But enough about my daughter, Shelly. We talked a little bit about, in fact, we talked a bunch about this, and the Tiffany Girls and your historical research. Kind of more specifically, can you talk about the research itself and how it impacts your final product? Or, like, do you maybe find a story and go, oh my goodness, that's such a nice caveat that I can include? Like, how does that process go?
Who knows? It changes. I mean, sure. Maybe it's just because I don't have, like, I haven't figured it out yet. But like for Tiffany Girls particularly, I was researching something else. I was researching psychoanalysis in 1906, and this strange website link came up in the scroll of articles about psychoanalysis. And of course, you know, authors cannot resist a rabbit hole. So I clicked on it, and and there was a story about these women who were responsible for Tiffany's iconic classwork. And I just knew, I mean, it said, I'm your story, and glom to me. And I did write it. But the weird part of this story is usually I like to go places, even if they're not the places in the book, but ones that you can like soak in the atmosphere. I wrote the first third of this book on lockdown during the pandemic. Right across the river are all these Tiffany works in the Met and the Neustadt magazine, a magazine museum. And I couldn't get to them. So it was all online. It became a very intimate experience with these group of women who we still don't know anything about.
I
had to, like, from, you know, from just from primary sources about other shop girls, and, you know, they were all called girls, and you know, typewriter girls and telegraph girls, and how their lives were. So I put these girls also in a boarding house so that I could see their family life. And we just sort of stumbled through this thing together because I didn't know anything about them, and they certainly don't know about me. And
I love that.
And it was a special of all my books, and there are a lot. That this has been a special thing.
It's just so neat how you said you've touched on this a couple times, how it finds you, you know, and you're kind of unavoidable. You're like, well, here it is. I have to do it.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I angst and angst and angst about my next book. And like, is this going to be, you know, I got to find something. And, you know, and then sometimes it just smacks you upside the head and you go, okay, you were there all along. Sorry for being dense, but yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
So believe it or not, we're already coming in here on the end of our show. But the important thing is that we're talking about this whole, the luncheon that's going on, the cocktails with authors on October 9th and luncheon with authors on October 10th. Can you guys talk about what you hope, you know, maybe your readers will get out of either one of these events? What's something that you're hoping to, for somebody to go home with, I guess? Amy, I'll start with you.
Sure. I think what's going to be fun to discuss with everybody is the parts of Mercury, my novel, that are real, that are inspired by real things, and then the parts that are fictional. That's always really, really fun since the book itself has kind of a mystery. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. And Shelley?
Well, I think more than my writing, I mean, I always like getting to know readers because it's so solitary. Yeah. But I believe that the museum is purchasing two of Agnes Northrup's windows. And so one of the big things in the Tiffany Girls was they were planning the Four Seasons window for the Paris exposition. So I would imagine that people would like to know more about.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time learning how, I mean, I didn't do it, but like learning how they made, you know, stained glass and those.
Sure.
So it's pretty fascinating.
And Meg?
Oh, I just love to talk to readers and find out what they're reading and steal all their good books. And of course, of course, return the favor by forcing on them all my favorite books. I just got the million-dollar question today. Somebody said, you're my favorite author. What are your favorite books? I want to go to the library today and get them. I was like, I've been waiting for someone to ask me this all my life. I have a list. Are you ready?
That's why you're like, that's why I keep a notebook just for this time.
Oh, yes,
that's fun.
You better read
them all. That's great. This has been, believe it or not, we're at 30 minutes. I told you, go by so fast. This has been fantastic. We don't want to give away the whole talk, of course. We want people to attend and to support SOTA. So let's make sure that everyone goes to SOTAPA.org, where you're going to learn more about the Society of the Arts, these fantastic authors who took time out of their busy schedule to spend some time with me tonight. And if you're not able to make it, SOTA has, you know, other events throughout the year, and you can still support. So thank you guys so much. Stick around after we stop going live for a second. But thank you guys so much for joining us, and thank everybody for watching us. And we hope
Thanks
to
for having
see
us.
You at Luncheon with the Authors. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.